So I just came back on Wednesday afternoon for a teaching tour of Melbourne as part of their WAYSAC celebrations. So the WAYSAC month, that's my last WAYSAC assignment for this year. But when I was over in Melbourne, I gave many talks. And one of the talks I gave there, I thought I'd use the same title here because it was a very useful and important talk. And it's something which is very pertinent to most people, especially this day and age, on fear. And fear is something which is a great cause of suffering, stops us being healthy, stops us being successful, stops us getting into deep meditation, stops us being at peace. And it's such an unskillful emotion in our mind, but at the same time a very common emotion. It's great to be able to understand it, where it comes from, how to overcome it, so you can live with less and less fear. And as you live with less and less fear, you will find you'll be far more peaceful, far more happy, be able to form relationships with others which are lasting, and also being able to even get into deep meditation and enlightened. Fear is such a huge problem in our modern world. And instead of our culture trying to discourage fear, we tend to be in a culture which encourages fear. You know, we go to movies where we delight in fear, whether it's ghost movies, or I was looking at the newspaper today, vampire movies, anything which will scare us, we love going to. And why is it that we are victims of fear? And that fear does create huge problems for you in life. But let's actually look at what fear really is. And one of the stories about fear, which is very important, it comes to my mind straight away when I was coming into Perth today in the windy, wild weather. It was an old story from a very famous and very profound a British philosopher who lived maybe about 100 years ago. I'm not quite sure how many people are interested in philosophy, but this is one of the philosophers I think everyone should read. He was one of these philosophers who didn't use big words, but his teachings were very profound. His name was Winnie the Pooh. Because if philosophy is really going to be useful, everyone should be able to understand it, even kids. So Winnie the Pooh was with his friend Piglet. And Piglet was a very small being, very kind, very loyal, but being very small was usually subject to a lot of fear. And one day they were walking back from Rabbit's house in a storm like we had today and yesterday. And as they were walking through the forest, trees were coming down around them. Branches were crashing to the floor. And even whole trees were being ripped off and smashing around them. That was very dangerous. So dangerous. So scary. The little Piglet could stand it no longer. He froze and he looked at his best friend, Winnie the Pooh, and said these words, "I can't go on any longer. I just can't. What would happen? What would happen if a tree fell down when we were underneath it?" And that was a possibility. And for a second, but only a second, the great philosopher and enlightened bear, Winnie the Pooh, was afraid. But only for a second. And then his wisdom kicked in. And he looked at his terrified friend and replied with these reassuring words, "What would happen if a tree did not fall when we were underneath it?" And that was also possible. In fact, even more possible. And that was the key to overcoming little Piglet's fear, so he could move on with the thought, what would happen if a tree did not fall when we were underneath it? And that's exactly what happened. So they could go back safely. And if you look at that exchange, just in a few sentences, Winnie the Pooh's author described the nature of fear and also its antidote. The fear is always what would happen if, followed by something negative, something terrible which might happen to us, which is a possibility but often very unlikely. And the antidote to fear is again what would happen if, and something positive, something nice. Not only is it more likely if we have the positive thought for the future, what would happen if and something nice, but it's also, it's a tendency, once you understand the nature of fear, that if we think of something negative, we tend to bring about that negative outcome because we fear it's going to happen. We make it happen. This story I remember when I was young. I was young and my father, I begged him and he shaved up and think for a birthday or a Christmas, I can't remember what, he bought me a bicycle. The first bicycle I ever had. And of course, being a kid with his first bicycle, you get on that bicycle and try to ride it and keep falling off. And I kept falling off and I never realized why until I looked at myself. I was holding onto those handlebars with so much fear that my knuckles went white. I was so afraid of falling off and my body was as stiff as a plank. And because I was so stiff, I was holding on too tight. Whenever the bike would move to the left, I would never be able to compensate. My body was too stiff to bend and to accommodate, which was why I kept falling off. It was fear kept pushing me over. It was only later on when I just relaxed, I found I could stay on that bicycle with more ease. In fact, when you really relaxed, you didn't fall off at all. It showed me just how fear was the reason why I kept falling off. When I was afraid what would happen if I fell off, that brought the falling off. But when I didn't even think about it, or when I started thinking what would happen if I didn't fall off, then I could relax and I was far more stable. That happens so often in life. What we fear, because that brings up a negative mind state, that creates the karma which causes that outcome to actually come. Those people who are afraid they may get cancer. That fear gives you a tension and tightness in the body and the mind, which is a contributing cause to a cancer. You get stressed, you can't relax and enjoy yourself. And we all know that many cancers are stress produced. Now, if you think that you might have a car accident on your way back home because of the wild weather, if you keep thinking like that, you get so afraid, you get so tense that again, now you overreact when someone pulls up in front of you, you slam down the brake or you accelerate too much. You have accidents. You know that this happens. It's a fear creates the sort of the problems in the future. And you also may know some people are just happy-go-lucky people. Oh, they're always so positive and nothing ever seems to happen to them. Why is that? Because the lack of fear creates the positive outcomes which we seek. Fear itself creates the greater possibility that something wrong might happen. So check it out in your life. You know, I've met many people who come to me for marriage counseling and sometimes I still protest. Why are you coming to a monk for marriage counseling? I'm a monk. You know what monks are? We don't get married. You know, we're single, we're celibate. Still, they come to monks because we understand just how the mind works and how emotions work and how people can live together or not live together, and you understand what happens when you go into a relationship with fear. Fear that that person's going to leave you or cheat on you, or fear that that person's already cheating on you and having a mistress somewhere or a toy boy. I don't know why they call them toy boys and not toy girls. Maybe we should use gender equal language and call them toy girls and toy boys, I don't know. But anyhow, whenever a person is so afraid, you can see that because there's that fear, there's also this terrible lack of trust. And when it's a lack of trust, there can't be a good relationship there. And many of you have been in relationships like that where there's no trust. Well, there's a lack of full trust. And why is there that lack of full trust? Because there's terrible fear. We fear that the marriage is, or the relationship is going to end. And so we don't trust. And because we don't trust, we cause the relationship to end. It's just this negative loop which we get into. What we fear, we make happen. And that thing about relationships is a very good place to sort of go on with this fear business. Because much of life is relationships, as I've taught here. And that fear which we have stops us relaxing and enjoying life. And of course, no one likes to be with a person who doesn't enjoy themselves. No one likes to be with a sourpuss. And sometimes people who don't know how to relax and enjoy themselves, that's just what they are. So even like when I teach monks at a monastery, you have to try and encourage them to relax and not to be afraid. You know, there's so many rules which we have to keep, there's so many things which we have to do. We're supposed to be leaders and examples, and sometimes that can be very fearful. But of course, if you're very fearful, you get so tense, there's no way that you can inspire people. So even as a monk, you have to learn how to have no fear and just relax. And that's been part of my life. They say the most fearful thing to do is to give a public talk. Especially when there's a camera on you, and it's going on the internet, it's going on YouTube. Over 50,000 people are going to listen to this talk all over the world. Especially if I do something stupid, then 100,000 people will listen to it. So why are you going to be afraid you're going to do something stupid? If you're afraid you're going to do something stupid, you tense up, and that's why you do something stupid and make a mistake. You all know that when you get tense up, you make mistakes. When you relax, things tend to flow quite smoothly. So I know that my biggest enemy, if you ever give a talk, is fear itself. So that's why you just relax. And you all know that I never sort of know very much what I'm going to talk about. Tonight I knew the title, but that's all I knew. I didn't know what was going to happen after you start talking. And I've been doing that for years. In fact, that's how I was taught by my teacher, Ajahn Chah. Now, he taught you to overcome fear. Imagine this. This was in February, after I'd only been a monk for 4 years. And this was the second biggest festival in the whole Buddhist calendar in Thailand. The full moon of February, it was called Marga Puja, second only to Vaisak in its size. So together with all the other disciples of my teacher Ajahn Chah, we went to his monastery, Wat Pa Phong, where there must have been about 5,000 or 6,000 people, lay people, and all the monks were there as well. And in the evening after the chanting, it was time for the talk, for the sermon. And I was looking forward to hearing Ajahn Chah teach something inspiring. But sometimes he didn't give the talk. Sometimes he would ask his second monk or his third monk to give the talk. Sometimes he would ask for any monk to give the talk. And that was scary. And what he'd do, he looked down this line of monks, this line of maybe 100-150 monks, and if his eyes stopped at you, you were in trouble. Big trouble. So I remember this very clearly. His eyes went down the line, past all these very senior monks who could give really good talks, and came to me, and went past. Whew. I was so relieved he was going to choose someone below me, someone who could speak Thai, because the talk had to be in Thai. But then his eyes stopped and went up the line again. He was a sadist. And stopped at me. Brahma Wangso, get up and give the talk. I'd only been 4 years as a monk, and I had to give the talk on this huge occasion in front of about 6,000 or 7,000 Thais. As I tell the story, it was 6,000, now it's gone up to 7,000. This is just what happens when you give talks. and with all these senior monks in front of my teacher, how would you feel? You were trained. It doesn't matter. You just went up there and gave a talk in Thai. Didn't matter how it came out, because the whole purpose of that was teaching you to overcome your fear. It's hard enough to give a talk in English, but give a talk in Thai for 1 hour, only 4 years in Thailand, to such a huge audience, that was a tough ask. But even tougher than that, this was one of the other monks. He'd be coming here in December, having a big meeting of all these senior monks from our tradition, Ajahn Sumedho. It was him who was asked to give a talk, not on such a big occasion, but on a weekly talks to all the lay community who were staying in this monastery overnight. So he gave a talk in Thai. It was sort of all right, but Westerners giving a talk in a foreign language is difficult. Sometimes you say the wrong word and people laugh and you don't know what you said, but you find out afterwards you get very embarrassed. And after he finished the hour, he went to stop the talk and go and sit down. But Ajahn Chah said, another hour. And he ordered this monk to give another hour's talk in Thai. You know, that's very difficult. You end up repeating yourselves, telling the same stories. You know, I tell the same stories, but I usually wait 2 or 3 weeks, you know, before you... And that's why what I really like talking to is old people who haven't got such a good memory. Because then they can always laugh at my talk jokes every week, even though it's the same joke. So he had to do another hour. And when he finished the second hour, you know, he said, now the talk is over. And Ajahn Chah shouted out, another hour. And at that point, many people got up and left. It's very embarrassing when you're giving a talk and people leave. But he had no choice. He had to keep on speaking. And now, of course, you get lots of pauses. I think, what am I going to say? How am I going to say it? And eventually he finished. He finished the third hour. By that time, many people had left. And those people who were still there had their eyes closed, snoring. They weren't paying attention. But he got through the third hour. And then Ajahn Chah said, okay, another hour! And the poor monk had to give another hour of talking. The worst possible talk you can ever imagine. Just mumbling, saying anything. When everybody had left except Ajahn Chah, probably. And then Ajahn Chah finally, after 4 hours, let him off. And he said, after that experience, he was never ever afraid of giving a talk ever again. He plumbed the depths, the very worst audience response, and it didn't matter. So that's actually how you learn to give public talks. Just get the worst possible response from your audience, and then you don't care anymore. You're just going to talk, and who cares if everybody leaves? Because fear is actually what makes it worse and what makes it not happen. So one of the great ways of overcoming fear is, number one, always have the positive attitude. What would happen if it didn't? How many of you are afraid you might lose your job in the economic recession? Be careful, because if you think like that, you will destroy your job. If you think, oh, I might lose my job in this recession, what happens, you get so afraid, you don't trust other people, you just get so tense, you don't perform well. You can't sort of trust the people you work with, and so they say, you don't get on with us, you're not a team player anymore. When you get so afraid, what happens is you usually stuff up your relationships, stuff up your work ethic, not a nice person to be around, and you're too afraid, so you can't relax and perform well. So you lose your job. Know the danger of fear. And know it's far better, if you really want to be successful, to be happy, stop all this fear business. Do the best you possibly can, and always have that positive attitude to the future. Not what would happen if, followed by something negative, but what would happen if, followed by something positive, to allow you to relax. Because it is fear which creates what we call the control freak inside of us. We only control a lot because of fear. And I know that many people who've got a lot of control, a lot of willpower, have that willpower because in their past they had some very painful experience. They suffered a lot. And because they suffered a lot, they think the only way to protect themselves and make sure that never happens again is to control more. And so they're such fearful people. They're always planning, figuring things out, putting plan A, plan B, plan C, just in case, because they don't want it to happen again. So they go into a relationship with plan A, B, C, D, E, F, many plans. They go into business with plans A to Z, and then they start the Greek alphabet, alpha, beta. Oh, they get so control freaks. And you know those control freaks. Those control freaks are just a pain in the ass. You're with them, you know, and they don't need to be like that. They create the problems in this world. To be a control freak means that you just cannot just go with the flow, just bend with the wind, and just adapt. I've often noticed that all plans which you have, you find if you have 10 plans, after a while, none of them actually fit. We shouldn't really have plans. I was commenting about the political crisis in our world. Mostly, this was when I was in Melbourne, somebody asked me a question about this. You know, most political crises come because the whole system is flawed, and it's flawed because of you, because of how you elect politicians. You elect politicians on what they promise to do in the future. You know, I understand the world well enough. I will never criticize any politician of any party for failing to keep their promises. I would only blame them for making those promises in the first place. How can you make promises to do this and to do that when you haven't got a clue what's going to happen in the next 6 months or year? We don't know what's going to happen with climate change, economies, wars. You know, when swine flu or some other flu comes in, now we've already had mad cow disease, now we had swine flu, now we might, I don't know, horse plague or dog dog something or other. But we don't know what's going to happen next, and you've all lived long enough to know that all these things are totally unexpected. They come out of the blue, and how can you make promises when you don't know what's going to happen next? You don't know what the situation is going to be, which is why when we elect any politicians who make promises, we throw them out because their promises aren't kept. It's stupid. We should never elect a politician on their promises. We should only elect politicians, our leaders, on their past conduct. Not what they promise for the future, but what they've done in the past. On their competence, on their track record. Just like you if you apply for a job, wouldn't you be given that job or not given the job on what you've done in the past? Not what you promise to do for that company in the future. So why are politicians different? Understanding this, you understand that it's because they make these plans and they just stuff up as a result. So just don't make plans. Wouldn't it be wonderful just to have this great fearlessness? We're not control freaks. We can face the future without making all these plan A, plan B, plan C's. I do that all the time. You go overseas, you go to Melbourne, I haven't got a clue what I'm going to talk about. And you've got all these talks all day, hundreds of people. You just go up there and just remember just one of those talks, actually where this fear talk came from. I was just going up there with the president of the Buddhist Society of Victoria, and I just about 30 seconds before I gave the talk, what should I talk about? Oh, talk about fear. Okay. Just go and do it. No plans, and it's much better that way. It's the same whenever you go overseas or you go interstate. You know, you go sort of on the aircraft, you make plans because the aircraft might be late. Now I know that there's many Sri Lankans here. And when you actually are late, you call it Sri Lankan time. When there are Thais here and you're late, it's called Thai time. Now we have what we call Qantas time. That is always half an hour late. At least that's my experience. But anyhow, Why do we make these big plans? It just maybe it might happen. Can't we just adapt to life as it sort of unfolds around us? So the way I have no fear is I know that what I really need to do, the plan which I really put into place, is number one, to be kind. That's my plan. That's plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, and the whole lot. Just be kind. It's amazing. If that's what you prepare yourself, just to be kind. You go in an interview for a job, just be kind. You go sort of to check in, just be kind. You just go and give a talk, just be kind. You go and talk to someone who's suicidal, they're about to commit suicide, they come to you as their last resort, and if you don't do anything correct, they go and kill themselves. That's happened to me many times. So what do I do? Just be kind. If you do that, it means you're prepared for whatever contingency happens in the future. But not just be kind, I also add this beautiful thing, have fun as well. I'm a fun-loving monk. So whatever I do, I try to put fun into whatever I do. So one of the scariest things which I did was actually to go on TV. Live TV. Broadcast around the nation. Because apparently, if you do anything stupid on TV, it goes on these bloopers shows, showed again and again and again, to all your friends. Imagine you say something stupid or do something stupid on TV. That's why people get afraid. And do I get afraid? No! It's wonderful. Because I look at the possibilities, what might happen. And I look at it, and what would happen if? And it's always something negative. I look at it, what would happen if? And always something positive. If I make a complete idiot of myself in public, that is wonderful. Then I can have a rest. I don't have to go travelling giving all these talks. I could actually have some peace in my life. That's why a couple of weeks ago when I went to Thailand, swine flu. And there's quite a few people here told me, Ajahn Brahm, you shouldn't go travelling. Swine flu in Thailand. A lot of pigs in Thailand. And I said, no, I'm travelling. Because if I do get swine flu, then apparently when you come back into the country, you have to go in quarantine. So that would be a retreat. That would be an extra retreat for me. I'd be able to have my own room, and have 3 meals a day, a nice bed, not on the floor, and no one will be able to ask me any questions, no one ringing me up because something's gone wrong with the Buddhist society or there's something happening over in whatever. That would be just wonderful if I get swine flu for a week or a couple of weeks. And if I don't get swine flu, great, I'm healthy. So therefore you don't have any fear. One of the monks who's been here before, but he died maybe about a year ago. He was used to call him the chief priest of Malaysia, Dr. K. Sri Dharmananda. He's got a few books in our library, like How to Live Without Fear and Worry is one of his famous ones. It's easier to write a book, isn't it? But can you do it? When he was diagnosed with cancer, terminal cancer, his doctor said he's the only person he ever met who, when he was diagnosed with terminal cancer, burst out laughing. Now that's a monk. Can you do that? Can you just burst out laughing? The doctor comes and says, you've got cancer, breast cancer, both have to be removed, and brain cancer, your brain has to be removed as well. I wish we could do that. Then you wouldn't have to think so much. Your meditation would go much better. But no, I'm only joking there. But would you just laugh and think, wow, great, I don't have to go to old people's homes. Go to nursing. Have you been to nursing homes? Do you want to go to a nursing home? So you've got cancer. Whoopee, no more nursing homes. Now, there's always a positive side in whatever happens. That's why if you look at that positive side, what would happen if, and put the positive side in there, where's the fear? What are you afraid of anyway? We've all got to die. Might as well get it over and done with, sooner rather than later. Get it out of the way. All you kids, Are you afraid of the examinations and the tests at school? I used to be afraid of failing tests at school. Were you afraid? Until I found out, every time you pass those examinations, it means you have to do another set next year. But as soon as you fail them, then you're out of here. So when you do, why are you afraid? If you pass, great, your mum and dad will be proud of you. If you fail, wow, you don't have to go to school again. Freedom at last. So when you have the idea of like freedom is like thinking of the future and putting something negative in it. That is the reason why we're afraid. And don't get sucked into some of these religions who say, if you don't give your donation into the donation box, you will go to the hell. The hell of the stingy people. Where you want something and they won't get it to you. In the hell of the stingy people, there are toilets, but the toilet paper always runs out, and you knock on the door, can you pass this toilet paper over? No. That's happened to me before. Got in the toilet, and you know, you don't look, you should be mindful, and there's no toilet in there, and you've got a lot of stuff on your backside, and nothing to do with it. Can you pass some toilet paper? Fortunately, they've always passed me something. But there's all sorts of things like that, the hell of the stingy, so be careful. But that's fear, isn't it? Getting fear inside of you, if you don't do this or you do that, something bad is going to happen to you. That type of fear, why do people have that fear? It just creates so much anxiety in their life, and because you've been trained like that when you were very young, you're anxious people, which means you control. Because you think, if I let go, something terrible is going to happen. I tell you, if you let go, nothing terrible happens. Have a wonderful time. But if you don't let go, then many terrible things happen to you. You get stressed out, you die young. You can't have relationships, you can't do well at work, you can't have any happiness. You can't just be you when you're afraid. So this, our conditioning is totally on the counterproductive. You find when we overcome fear, and when religions don't promote fear, fortunately that Buddhism is a religion which doesn't promote fear. It's not a case, if you do something wrong, something bad's going to happen to you. If you do something wrong, then it just gets more interesting in life. Just more sort of, more, as I say, shit to put under your mango tree when you do things wrong. You can always do something with it, no matter what happens in life. And that sort of punishment is just not there in Buddhism. And because it's not there in Buddhism, then what are you afraid of anyway? You can always do something, whatever happens. There's no such thing as a wrong choice. That's another brilliant insight which I had as a young man. There's no such thing as a wrong choice. So what are you afraid of making choices for? You just make the choice and just live with it. Because all those choices you just really worry about and worry about and worry about. All those choices, you know, should I go out with this girl or that girl? Didn't matter at all, I became a monk. All that choices of whether I should go in this course or that course, they didn't matter either. All that choices, should I sort of spend the money or keep the money, totally irrelevant. So all the choices you worry about, they don't matter at all. So you just choose and just leave it at that. And if whatever choice you make, your career, your partner, whatever, if you want to get married, it doesn't matter, that'll do. Come on, let's go and get married. You can always make it work if you've got dumb in your heart. You want this job, that job, which job are you going to get? Oh, it doesn't matter, just take a job. This is me. When I was building that retreat center, you know, I was the main person who sort of got involved. And so often, you know, people would come with that retreat center. Should we do it this way or that way? Oh, that'll do. And I wasn't a control freak. Even this person came along and they wanted to know what colour I wanted for something or other. And they came and sort of showed it to me and said, oh, that'll do. So what do you mean, that'll do? That's good enough, it's a colour. Blind man would be glad to see it, as we say. So, why, what's the big problem? But sometimes people can worry so much about what colour should you paint the walls. And it's just really difficult these days. You get these colour charts, and there are 1,000 colours to worry about. Which one should you choose? In the old days, it was much easier. Red, brown, yellow, white. Much easier. And you got so much choice. I mean, what do? You don't worry about the choices. You just flip a coin. But I can't flip a coin. I haven't got a coin. I'm a monk. You just make a decision. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. That's the one I'm going to go. And what I've found, whatever your choice you make, you can always do something with it. So what the heck? What are you worried about? The world doesn't go wrong if you make a bad choice. So just do it and stop worrying about it. It's the worrying which was the worst thing. Worrying was much worse than so-called mistakes. And where did the worry come from? Fear and controlling, what would happen if sort of stuff. Well, I just forget about that. If you don't like it, you can repaint it yourself. Tell your friends who come and visit. They say, what do you paint those, get those curtains that colour for? Don't you like them? No, they're terrible. Okay, you go and change them. And you pay for them as well. That's one of our rules in the monastery. You should have this rule in your house as well. If anyone has an idea, they have to do it. If they think the gutters need cleaning, they come up to you and say, oh, you know, the gutters need cleaning. The rule, you have to do it. It really keeps many people quiet. But what it means, we just don't complain, we just take life easy and just allow things to happen. Things get done, and life goes on. When you don't control things so much, life goes on much better. It's a quality of life, it's a process of life. It's not where you get to, it's how you get there. It's not we have the beautiful house and the beautiful family. Because a lot of time, right, to build a beautiful house and a perfect family, but they're just control freaks. It's just surface, inside. No one likes each other. And why? It's because everyone is so afraid of being perfect. There was one of the men I saw in Melbourne. He used to be an anagarika in my monastery down in Perth a long time ago. But he was saying when he was first there, he was trying so hard to be perfect. He was so afraid of breaking a rule. And that's why he got so tense, trying to control his body, control his speech, control his mind. He got so tense he couldn't stand it and he left. So that's not what a monastery is like. That's what not life is like. You misunderstood there. Or maybe my mistake, because I didn't emphasize kindness and no control and letting things be more. You can understand from what he was feeling. Some of you might feel like that in a relationship, trying to be so damn perfect because you're afraid. And because you're being so perfect and controlling yourself, you can't relax. And the other person feels that. They don't like to be with someone like you. You're too stiff. But imagine a person who has no fear, not trying to be perfect, just being yourself. Relax, that's who you are. And because you're relaxed, because you're letting go, you're not controlling, there's no fear. People tend to like you. Don't you like authentic, relaxed people? Not people who are trying to be perfect, but just people, that's who they are. It's great when, you know, you're with somebody who's not perfect, because then you're not so afraid of not being perfect yourself. I remember years ago, this Buddhist here, the first year I was here, he came up to us and said he was getting divorced. And what's wrong? He said his wife's too perfect. It makes me so sort of embarrassed. I can't sort of live up to that. So don't try and be too perfect. Just be yourself. And that way you relax. You're not controlling. You're not acting out of fear. But more than that, I always want to know where fear comes from. We all know it's counterproductive. But all the fear comes from the controller in chief, you. This sense of self and ego, which in Buddhism we try and let go of, no non-self, no ego. Forget about yourself, forget about the person you're with, that's not the point. It's always us, it's the relationship, not a person, not a me, not a person over there, them. It's always us, the relationship. But when we have a sense of self, a sense of me, there's always going to be a fear, because your sense of self is built up by prestige, reputation, who you think you are, how good you are at this, how wonderful you are at that, all of your skills and your strong points, that's who you think you are. When you make a mistake, what do you say? I wasn't feeling myself today. Oh, that wasn't really me. When you make a mistake. But all the sort of the good things about you, that's who you think you are. There's one of these Sufi stories, Nasruddin stories, when this was like a mullah in Persia, before it was called Iran, many, many years ago. A great Sufi story. Now, in those days, any people of religion were very highly respected. Now, not so much these days, but they were like pillars of society. Now, this pillar of society, this great mullah who was so respected in the community, decided to take his students to the fair for an outing. They'd been meditating and studying and practicing so hard. Let's give them a day out. So he took them to the fair. And at that fair there were many stalls, and one of the stalls was an archery store. Just like the old coconut shies, but with bows and arrows. And if you manage to hit the target, the ball, you get a prize. And so this Mullah Nasruddin said, yeah, this looks easy enough. Give me a bow and three arrows. And so he paid over, you know, a few dollars. And all his students were really surprised, because he was like a holy man. What does a holy man know about weapons, like a bow and arrow? He said, oh, it's just concentration, just mindfulness, that's all it is. You know, I can do this. So he put the first arrow in the bow. And everyone was really quite surprised. It's like, if you give me a bow and arrow, I never shot a bow and arrow in my life. Now, could the power of Samadhi, if Ajahn Brahm had a bow and arrow, how accurate would he be? And that's what they're thinking with this mullah. And so he put the arrow in the bow. See, even I don't know which one goes in which. Put the arrow in the bow and shot it. And it only went about halfway to the target. It didn't even, no, not even miss it. It just didn't get there to miss it. And everybody started to giggle, because the guy was making a fool of himself. And people love it when people in authority make a fool of themselves. And then he just turned around and said, that was the shot of a hasty man. And then he put his second arrow in the bow. And this time he took more time. And he pulled that arrow further back as the wood of the bow stretched. And he shot the next arrow. And it certainly made the distance, but went about a $2 train ride to the left. It missed it a long way. And people really started to guffaw. And he just turned around and said, that was a shot of an arrogant man. And then he put his last and third arrow in the bow. Took his time, aimed and shot that. And that one went right in the middle of the bullseye. And as he claimed his prize, the relieved student said, well, if the first shot was a shot of a hasty man, and the second was a shot of an arrogant man, what was the third shot? He said, that was my shot. That was me. Which was showing we always take credit for the successes, and we blame our faults on, that wasn't me. I was feeling a bit sick. I was just off my game today. I was not just really in the right mood. Now this is how we build up a sense of self, a sense of me. Which is why that we get so afraid when we're about to lose our reputation. When we're about to do something which doesn't fit with who we think we are. And that's that fear of ridicule. The fear of shame. The fear of stuffing up. Now that's one of the biggest fears of all, which stops us again just relaxing and enjoying other people's company. Many people don't speak a foreign language because they're afraid of saying a wrong word and getting embarrassed. As for me, I have no fear. So I try any language, and it doesn't matter if I stuff up and say something stupid. Because if people laugh, then I've made them happy. And isn't that what a monk is supposed to do? To make other people happy. So if I say something stupid and make you laugh because I'm an idiot, isn't that an act of compassion for other beings? It seems that's what happened. That's what I was taught, because my teacher Ajahn Chah, when any monk did something stupid, that's what he would do. He would just laugh. He thought it was terribly funny. You know, when his Western monks did stupid things. I remember this one girl came from England. She was like 18 or 19 years of age, came to visit our monastery. And you know the squat toilets we have in Asia? You know, you squat down on them. So some people have a hard time squatting down on the toilets, you know, they fall over, and that's not such a good thing when you want to go. So instead of actually squatting down, we built, especially out of compassion for all these visitors from places like England and Australia, we built like a frame so you can actually put it over the squat toilet and actually sit on it. So because most people use a squat toilet, so we just put this frame just to the side. And that's the toilet which this girl used. It just had no hole in the bottom. No water. It was only a frame, but she sat on it and it did her business. They went all on the floor. Exactly. That's what you did. That's what Ajahn Chah did. That's what I did. I thought it was terribly funny. Well, thank you for doing that. You gave me another story. But what happens? Some people get terribly embarrassed about that. Oh, don't tell other people. But be careful, because I use it as story in a Friday night talk, so be careful if you tell me. So why are you afraid of making a mistake? One of the things I was taught as a school teacher, and this is a wonderful thing for life, if you do something stupid and make a mistake, and other people laugh, you laugh as well. And that means the world never laughs at you, it only laughs with you. And that overcomes a lot of fear. So in public talks, if I make a mistake, say something stupid, and I mention many of the stupid things which I've done in the past, especially on important occasions. Important occasion like that marriage I did once. It was a Thai girl. She was very, very sweet and very young, maybe 19 or 20. And I'd heard that she was marrying an Australian guy. So when they came in here for their wedding, I saw this young Thai girl coming in with this elderly Australian man. And I said to this Australian man, "Oh, you must be the father-in-law." "No, I'm the groom," he said. That wedding didn't go down very well. But funerals are even better. When you make mistakes at funerals, they're really funny. Like that time when it was a Sri Lankan couple who come here, and they told me that their parent had died, and can I come and do the funeral? So I did the funeral for them, because, you know, I'd do anything for you guys. And so there I was, standing at the front with all these very serious people in front of me, and I say, "We've come here today on a sad occasion of, I forget, this couple's mum who's passed away, and she was such a wonderful lady." And then this old woman stood up at the back. "It's not me, it's my husband who's died. I'm still okay." That was a really funny funeral, that was. That's one of my favourites. I really stuffed up there. And once, especially the funeral, because once you made a big mistake like that, you tell everybody, it's great. But I'm not embarrassed about it, I think it was very funny. Everyone makes mistakes. What are you so afraid of, making mistakes? Let everybody know and make them laugh. It makes a much happier life when other people laugh. It means you're not afraid of making mistakes. You let people know stupid things you do. So when you do stupid things like that, and you laugh at them, it means you're not afraid of doing stupid things in the future. Your reputation is not so important that you can't be human. You make a mistake, do something stupid and laugh at it. You can see just how you can be at peace with yourself when you don't have to be perfect. which means you're not afraid of making mistakes. One of the rules at Bodhinyana Monastery, every now and again I say this, so this is one place in the world, one community where you are permitted to make mistakes. Isn't that wonderful? To go to a place where you're allowed to make a mistake. Many mistakes. Because I know psychology, where you allow people to make mistakes, they hardly make any. But when you're afraid what might happen if you make a mistake, you make heaps. It's psychology, and I think you can understand why. So are you afraid of making mistakes? That is your fear. So overcome that, let it go. It doesn't matter making mistakes. It's all right. So you're allowed to point your feet at the Buddha. You're allowed to fall asleep during my talk. You're allowed to snore while I'm talking. You're allowed, when I tell a joke, to say, oh no, not that one again. Which brings me on to today's joke. I'm not sure. Do you remember, because I told this to somebody today, and they hadn't heard it for a while, about the man lost in the desert who met the Eskimo? Sounds a good joke, doesn't it? There was a guy lost in the desert. He'd been in the desert for a long time. And he couldn't walk anymore, he was crawling, he was parched, about to die. You know, when you get this really hot desert, you get delirious. So there he was crawling, and he saw an Eskimo coming, you know, in a sled with huskies, the big works, you know, with a big fur hat on. And he said, this can't be true. An Eskimo in the desert? But the Eskimo came right up to him. And it was really, could touch him, it wasn't a fantasy at all. It was an Eskimo in the desert. And this guy said, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad I've been lost for days in this desert. And the Eskimo, and you think you're lost. So it's all right to say, oh, that's a terrible joke. I'm going out of here. I want my money back. And I'm not afraid. That's why I tell jokes. I don't care if you like them or not, if you groan. I'm telling them. And I'm enjoying it. What about you? So you don't have any fear. When you don't have any fear, you don't control. When you don't control, you let go. And when you don't let go, you have so much peace in life, so much happiness in life. You just flow with life. You don't make so many plans. You'll be more adaptive when you're not afraid. So you lose all your money in the stock market. You lose your job. Great! Every Monday morning you can sleep in. So, you know, your wife leaves you. Wonderful! Now I can go to the monastery and become a monk. Look at the positive side of life, for goodness sake. So you don't have any fear, which means also when you're meditating, how do you meditate with fear? And what would happen if I fell asleep? What happens if I fell over? What happens if I had these stupid thoughts come up? When you fear these things, you get tense. And when you get tense, that's the opposite of what meditation is supposed to be about. So instead of having fear in your meditation, just no plans, nothing to gain, nothing to go, nowhere to go. Just be and relax with no fear at all what might happen. You have to do that in meditation. If you really want to get very deep in meditation, you come across some very powerful fears. Fears of things disappearing. Now those are the great fears to overcome. Because there's something in Buddhism we call attachments. And when any of those attachments disappear, or are about to disappear, that can be very scary for you. Especially when it's things which are very, very closely attached to you, like your body. When that starts to vanish, where's my body gone? Don't worry, it's not your body. It came from your mum and dad. Are you going to give it up afterwards? When people ask me the question in Buddhism, Now, what do you tell people? Where do you go when you die? There are three places you can go when you die. Karakata, Fremantle, Pinneroo. So you're going to end up there anyway. So your body is not yours. So don't worry about it disappearing in meditation. In fact, it's just a great relief when you've got no aches, no pains, no heat, no cold. Ah, I'm so free in meditation. So when you get to those stages in meditation, the body's about to go, let it go. Nothing to do with me, doesn't belong to me. So don't have fear. Fear is always coming up because you think you own something. And it's not yours, it's about to disappear. You can let go of the body in meditation when you get to have to let go of the body when you die. Great! Goodbye, body. Had enough of you, you're old, you're sick, you're falling apart. Gee, you wouldn't keep sort of a car like that, would you? How many of you got a... You wouldn't, would you? Many of you, every, was it couple of years or 3 years, you change your car, get a new model? What is it? The old body's 50, 60, 70 years of age and you keep sort of trying to get spare parts. And dream kick. So some of these people, they shouldn't be on the road, should they? So don't be afraid to let it go. It's great, good riddance. Get a better model next time. And of course, like anything else, as long as you've got a good insurance policy, if you've got a good insurance policy and a tree falls on your car, you get actually more. Actually, our car, we found out we've insured it for much more than it's worth. So I was just hoping, please, may a tree fall on it. Please, may someone speak. So if you've done really good karma, then you're insured for more than you're worth. Which means that once this body dies, you get a much better body next time. So it's just like our car, if that sort of crashes or stuff, we can get a new car, same money, brilliant, because we're over-insured. Just like you. So if you paid up all your insurance premiums, the donations, 5 precepts, being a good person, coming to the temple, then when you die, you get a really beautiful car next time. Nice body, nice, beautiful, fit and healthy, smart, rich. Yeah, it's weird. So keep your insurance premiums paid up. So that's our car, we can let it go. But then you get deep in meditation. When your thoughts stop. When there's silence. A lot of times we're attached to our thinking. And we feel very strange when nothing is going on between our ears. When your second mouth, you know what your second mouth is? This is your first mouth. The second mouth is inside your brain between your ears. Yang, 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 yang. Always thinking, always complaining. That's your second mouth. And your second mouth shuts up. All it is a fear of the unknown. But when you get to know that, it's so peaceful. You aren't your thinking. And then we get really deep. When your will stops. When that disappears. Are you afraid to actually to surrender your will? And there's nothing left. Perfect peace. When that happens, please don't be afraid. No one's going to take over your mind. You're just going to be so free when this thing inside of you, which is always controlling you, telling you what to do, telling you how to be, telling you to always go, stopping you from being at peace for any moment, when that subsides. Oh, that's really bliss. Those are the jhanas. Ah, oh, it's so nice. So never be afraid of letting go. Because in deep meditation you find you don't own anything. So if you don't own anything, let it all go. Let it all disappear. And then we don't have fear. You understand why meditation is all about letting things go. No control, no fear, just being here, knowing that if you put all your kindness and mindfulness into this moment, you don't have to fear anything. It's good karma in this moment. That's all you need to do. Make peace, be kind, be gentle in this moment. And the whole process just unfolds. No fear, no control, perfectly at peace. That's the path to enlightenment. Enlightened beings don't have fear. Giving it up. Don't want it anymore. Useless. Why be afraid? Whatever happens, it's okay. Give a good talk, fine. I'll give a talk next week. Bad talk, so don't want him again. Either way, I'm sweet. So what are you afraid of in life? Is it really worth being afraid of that? Is it what would happen if, and you've got this terrible negative thing happening afterwards? Instead, put something positive. And even don't even think about it. Just be in this moment as much as you can. Don't plan. Just be kind and be mindful. That's the best plan you can have for the future. And you'll find everything will go far more smoothly when you stop worrying about it. Life goes on even better without you. That's the truth, and you know it damn well, but you just don't admit it. And by being without you, I mean without your controlling and interference. Don't interfere with life. Life knows what to do. You just go along for the ride and stop shouting at the driver. So that's the talk this evening. Letting go of fear. So, who's got a question? And don't be afraid of asking a question. Any questions this evening? Yes, from the back.
There's this program on ABC TV called Question and Answer.
Yeah?
And they have, like, sometimes they have religious leaders on comment.
Yeah?
And I remember them commenting that they hadn't had a Buddhist teacher.
Aha! This is my chance! Okay, you're saying that on ABC there's a program called Question and Answer, and they have religious people in there. They've never had a Buddhist monk yet. That's unfair. I'm not going to stand for this. Yeah, get a petition going. No, if you've got an ABC, you've got to live in Sydney, basically. So if you lived in Sydney, because that's where all the studios are. So we don't exist over here in the Wild West. But anyway, you petition them. So I know this guy. Bald head, brown robe, he qualifies. Yeah, you got a question there.
What about fear of expectation? Because I find that I'm becoming increasingly scared to expect something good to happen. Whenever I expect something to never happen, I'm going to get a job that I really, really wanted. And so I've been scared to expect anything.
Yeah, I mean, just all expectations is always the even word expectations, be looking outside of this moment. Look, we look outside too much. We should inspect more. In other words, look at how you're feeling now, what's going on. And you find, you get the job, you don't get the job, it doesn't really matter. You're still alive, you still have plenty of other jobs to get. So what? There's always another bus coming, sort of a few minutes later. It might be a better bus. So what? Just let life come on. Because sometimes I was very disappointed. Many times I had a broken heart because my girlfriend dumped me. Now I think, oh, thank you so much, girlfriends, for dumping me. I would never have been a monk. Thank you so much, so much, so much. Thanks I didn't get that job. Thanks I didn't this happen. Because in the end, you don't know how your life goes. And when you look narrow, you think, oh, this is a terrible disaster. But in the big picture, oh, it's a wonderful thing which happened to you. So that way, don't have any expectations because you don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not sure what's going to happen. So just let it happen and see what happens next. But I do know that if I don't stop soon, the president might get upset at me. So we might stop now.